I may state further that the final meaning of the dream, which I have not given here, has the most intimate connection with the content of the childhood scene. In another series of dreams, we learn from analysis that the wish itself, which has given rise to the dream and whose fulfillment the dream turns out to be, has originated in childhood, until one is astonished to find that the child, with all its impulses, lives on in the dream. I shall now continue the interpretation of a dream which has already proved instructive. I refer to the dream in which friend R is my uncle. We have carried its interpretation far enough for the wish motive of being appointed professor to assert itself tangibly, and we have explained the affection displayed in the dream for friend R as a fiction of opposition and spite against the aspersion of the two colleagues who appear in the dream thoughts. The dream was my own. I may therefore continue the analysis by stating that my feelings were not quite satisfied by the solution reached. I know that my opinion of these colleagues who were so badly treated in the dream thoughts would have been expressed in quite different terms in waking life. The potency of the wish not to share their fate in the matter of appointment seemed to me too slight to account for the discrepancy between my estimate in the dream and that of waking. If my desire to be addressed by a new title proves so strong, it gives proof of a morbid ambition which I did not know to exist in me, and which I believe is far from my thoughts. I do not know how others, who think they know me, would judge me, for perhaps I have really been ambitious. But if this be true, my ambition has long since transferred itself to other objects than the title and rank of assistant professor. Whence, then, the ambition which the dream has ascribed to me? Here I remember a story which I heard often in my childhood, that at my birth an old peasant's wife had prophesied to my happy mother, I was her firstborn, that she had given to the world a great man. Such prophecies must occur very frequently. There are so many mothers happy in expectation, and so many old peasant wives whose influence on earth has waned, and who have therefore turned their eyes towards the future. The prophetess was not likely to suffer for it either. Might my hunger for greatness have originated from this source? But here I recollect an impression from the later years of my childhood, which would serve still better as an explanation. It was of an evening at an inn on the Prater, where my parents were accustomed to take me when I was 11 or 12 years old. We noticed a man who went from table to table and improvised verses upon any subject that was given to him. I was sent to bring the poet to our table, and he showed himself thankful for the message. Before asking for his subject, he threw off a few rhymes about me, and declared it probable, if he could trust his inspiration, that I would one day become a minister. I can still distinctly remember the impression made by this second prophecy. It was at the time of the election for the municipal ministry. My father had recently brought home pictures of those elected to the ministry, Herbst, Giskra, Unger, Berger, and others, and we had illuminated them in honour of these gentlemen. There were even some Jews among them. Every industrious Jewish schoolboy therefore had the making of a minister in him. Even the fact that until shortly before my enrolment in the university I wanted to study jurisprudence, and changed my plans only at the last moment, must be connected with the impressions of that time. A minister's career is under no circumstances open to a medical man. And now for my dream. I begin to see that it transplants me from the sombre present to the hopeful time of the municipal election, and fulfills my wish of that time to the fullest extent. In treating my two estimable and learned colleagues so badly, because they are Jews, the one as a simpleton and the other as a criminal, in doing this I act as though I were the Minister of Education. I put myself in his place. What thorough revenge I take upon His Excellency! He refuses to appoint me Professor Extraordinarius, and in return I put myself in his place in the dream. Another case establishes the fact that although the wish which actuates the dream is a present one, it nevertheless draws great intensification from childhood memories. I refer to a series of dreams which are based upon the longing to go to Rome. I suppose I shall still have to satisfy this longing by means of dreams for a long time to come, because, at the time of year which is at my disposal for travelling, a stay at Rome is to be avoided on account of considerations of health. Thus I once dreamt of seeing the Tiber and the bridge of St. Angelo from the window of a railroad compartment. Then the train starts, and it occurs to me that I have never entered the city at all. The view which I saw in the dream was modelled after an engraving which I had noticed in passing the day before in the parlour of one of my patients. On another occasion, someone is leading me upon a hill and showing me Rome, half enveloped in mist, and so far in the distance that I am astonished at the distinctness of the view. The content of this dream is too rich to be fully reported here. The motive, to see the promised land from afar, is easily recognizable in it. The city is Lübeck, which I first saw in the mist. The original of the hill is the Gleichenberg. In a third dream I am at last in Rome, as the dream tells me. To my disappointment, the scenery which I see is anything but urban. A little river with black water, on one side of which are black rocks, on the other large white flowers. I notice a certain Mr. Zucker, with whom I am superficially acquainted, and make up my mind to ask him to show me the way into the city. It is apparent that I am trying in vain to see a city in the dream which I have never seen in waking life. If I resolve the landscape into its elements, the white flowers indicate Ravenna, which is known to me, and which, for a time at least, deprived Rome of its leading place as capital of Italy. In the swamps around Ravenna, we had seen the most beautiful water lilies in the middle of black pools of water. The dream makes them grow on meadows like the narcissi of our own Ausse, because at Ravenna it was such tedious work to fetch them out of the water. The black rock so close to the water vividly recalls the valley of the Tepl at Karlsbad. Karlsbad now enables me to account for the peculiar circumstance that I ask Mr. Zucker the way. In the material of which the dream is composed appear also two of those amusing Jewish anecdotes, which conceal so much profound and often bitter worldly wisdom, and which we are so fond of quoting in our conversation and letters. One is the story of the Constitution, and tells how a poor Jew sneaks into the express train for Karlsbad without a ticket, how he is caught and is treated more and more unkindly at each call for tickets by the conductor, and how he tells a friend, whom he meets at one of the stations during his miserable journey, and who asks him where he is travelling, "To Karlsbad, if my constitution will stand it." Associated with this in memory is another story about a Jew who is ignorant of French, and who has express instructions to ask in Paris for the way to the Rue Richelieu. Paris was for many years the object of my own longing, and I took the great satisfaction with which I first set foot on the pavement in Paris as a